Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Modiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are talking sort of more on the consumer side of things, something that's very important to us, that's telecommunications and, connectivity, use of the internet, that type of thing, specifically 5G technology, which is touted to be that next frontier of communications technologies in the world. Lots of controversies around the world about what the technology is and what it is not. Even around the coronavirus, it's been a crazy time. And to sort of help us to unpack some of these issues, we are joined by Jacques Dutoy, who is the CEO of Vox, which is a technology and telecoms player in the market. Many people usually know Vox for being a fiber operator in the local market. Jacques, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Madiwa. Good to have another discussion with you. Thank you very much.
No. Thank you so much. It is great because usually we've touched on some of these issues, but usually in private. And I think, there might be some benefit on this platform. I think just a good place for us to start, as Vox, we've already, before we get into the 5G discussion, we've already spoken about the fact that you guys are a fiber operator in the local market, and you guys were an essential service, or have been an essential service, during the lockdown. How has business been during this time, and how have you seen it sort of evolving as, we've progressed? I mean, today is the first day of level one. How have you seen that transition from level five all the way now down to where we are?
Yeah, I think the one thing I can say is this was a very stressful but yet encouraging times we went through. And the other thing is I've never learned so much in such a short space of time. I mean, we started off by having to reallocate 1,700 people to be able to continue to offer servicing our customers. Then we had to continue with network rollouts and connecting homes. What was very interesting in the beginning, we saw a massive spike in requests for fiber to the home solutions. We saw everything in business grounding to a halt. And that pretty much continued up until the beginning of September. We only now starting to see businesses come back. But a phenomenon that I think most of us are experiencing is this work from home movement, or work from anywhere, or distributed working environment. Now, in May, a lot of our corporates reached out to us and said, guys, we are forcing our people to work from home. We don't have a choice. Please, can you help us deliver the same service offering at their homes than what you are doing for us as a corporate? And we then realized that we could have put together a work-from-home solution or suite that consisted of Wi-Fi access points, printers, laptop rentals, security solutions, Office 365, the connectivity itself. So, and we saw the spike in terms of the requirement for that. And I actually thought that that was going to die down when we, as we got closer to level two, closer to level one. And this morning we had a discussion around going forward, because last week we did some research with our corporates, and it's amazing that 91% of corporates that have actually realized the benefits of distributed working environments have embraced it and are saying they will continue to do it. I think the other percentage that was interesting is about 84% of the respondents said they're seeing a better work-life balance, massive cost savings, both for employees and corporates. So yeah, I'm quite bullish about the future. I think we've embraced the new norm. I think it has definitely pushed us to be a lot more innovative. And this is where we are now, and we're making the best of it. So actually very, very bullish. And then from a Vox perspective, although the president's announcement said up to 50% of employees can go back with a maximum of 250 in a closed area, we said to the staff on Friday, I did a company update briefing, and we said, guys, the long and the short is, as a management team, as Vox, we've embraced this culture. Up to 250 per building can go back, but we actually want you to work from home if you can. So if you've got the right connectivity, if you're productive, if you're disciplined, please stay at home. Yeah, and this morning when we did a check-in with some of the managers, I would guess 99% I don't. That's the new Vox for us.
You know, Jacques, as you're talking, I think at the beginning of the lockdown, one of the clear issues that was coming out was this work from home thing. And, you know, just talking to other, you know, telecoms executives such as yourselves, it really sounded like this was one of those fundamental changes. But as people are moving to level one, we do see a number of companies sort of, can I say, backtracking a little bit, wanting to get some of their workforces to come back to the office. What's your, you know, I guess, position on all of that? Because it sounds like at Vox, you guys have sort of fully embraced this thing, because I think one of the biggest concerns is what happens to the property, the buildings, the offices, and perhaps, you know, for companies that are renting offices or land, you know, how do they, you know, sweat those assets if no one is there to use those buildings, those offices?
Yep. So I think there's two answers to your question. The first one is, I believe the culture gets established from the top. And I think that is that's known to everyone. So if a management layer goes about saying, guys, we have got to work at the office, everybody will be at the office. If management says we've embraced a culture of distributed work, it will definitely be very attractive to certain individuals and they will welcome that proposal. So we've got lots of customers who said, I can't work at home, where the management and the CEO will say, can't work at home. I've got to see my staff. I've got to know what they're doing, what time they get to the office. And strange enough, all of them went back today. Then you've got businesses that are more like Vox. So the first answer to your question is, I think it starts at the top. Those that embraces it and those industries where it can be accommodated, I think for those, that is the new norm. Manufacturing environments, mines, factories, I mean, clearly those individuals can't work from home, you know, apart from the admin team. Then in terms of the properties, I would think that nearly 100% of all the corporates out there that has embraced this distributed working environment have left their leases to run as long as possible, because no one here has got a crystal ball that tells us what the future is going to look like. So We've given ourselves optionality. We've let our leases run. We might have introduced some cost savings, coffee, plants, water delivery, those kind of things. But in terms of the real estate, we said, let's give ourselves another 6 months to see how this distributed environment really settles in. And if we see it's not sustainable, then we've got an office to go back to. If it's sustainable after 6 months, then we'll make a decision what to do with the property then. In terms of the use of properties, I do think you're going to see a lot of shifts when it comes to the existing use versus what the future will hold. You know, so I believe some of the movie theaters have converted their theaters out into conference venues, church, a place where churches are having ceremonies on Sundays. I think offices will convert to residential, or at least multi-use, where it will be some residential and some office. You've already seen that at the APSA building in Johannesburg CBD. I think the top five floors remained offices, while the balance of that building is now being converted into residential space. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And then something that I must add, there's something that I thought was very interesting. It sounds like drive-ins are going to come back. There's apparently four areas in Durban where the guys are saying, let's test the appetite to reintroduce the old school of driving. So yeah, let's see what happens.
No, it certainly does sound like some of these older trends are coming back. I am aware of a couple of businesses that have actually pivoted some of their offerings to offer drive-ins of some sort because of these changes in behaviors and shifts and office buildings that haven't had use for a while, but they're looking for ways to make money. But I want to switch over, you know, to talk about connectivity, you know, because we are, you know, here to talk about 5G. And one of the things I wanted to talk about before that specifically about 5G is how concerned do you think consumers are about their internet speeds? Because I think before lockdowns, people seemed to be okay with skimping on network speeds in favor of price. But where, you are now working from home or forced to do a lot more work from home, it does seem like people began to sort of appreciate the value of having a faster and steady connection. And as an industry, fiber operators doubled speeds for a period of time to help, you know, with that. Would you say that also helped to maybe foster some type of a fundamental change where if someone had a 5 megabit line and then it was doubled to 10, you know, they've now experienced that speed. But after that grace period, they were like, okay, fine, I think I can keep this 10 because I can see the benefits.
Yeah, so again, two answers here. The first one is the double up, I think, did introduce the benefits of higher speeds to the end user. And he realized, you know, it is a more pleasurable experience. The main driver behind higher speeds is more pertinent when it comes to multiple people working from home. You know, the period April to June, it was the entire family stuck at home. So the kids, if they were still attending school, did that virtually. Mom and dad both worked the whole day online. Entertainment was limited to whatever you can get via an online medium of one sort or the other. So speed definitely became an issue. And then I think most of the collaboration that happened between various parties had to do with video. And that I can see, if I engage with someone, you know, now that that's part of what I'm doing on a daily basis, I actually want to see you. I want to see your facial expression. I want to see your eyes. I want to see the energy. I want to see how you dressed, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, video, unfortunately, requires a lot more bandwidth than voice alone. So if the world is moving to a more of a collaborative approach where video plays a role in business, then I think speed is going to be a number one topic. The other number one topic will be reliability. You know, it's one thing to say I've got great speed, but is that speed maintained at all, the, you know, at any given time? And I think that's one of the areas where the mobile technologies came very short. As soon as there were contention on those base stations, you saw a degradation of service. And someone that was used to a 20 meg link via LTE, maybe 30, got maybe one if he was lucky. And that introduced an enormous amount of pressure into the system. Frustration, anger, because that was the only way of connectivity that person had, and now he's been dropped from 20, 30 megs down to one, sub one in some cases.
And then speaking of speeds, I guess into this future of the quote-unquote new normal that we keep hearing about, what place do you see 5G, I guess, playing in that future? Because one of the things that did happen during this lockdown period was the fact that on the mobile side, at least, you saw two of the biggest operators both launching commercial 5G services using the temporary spectrum that had been allocated to them by the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa. So from that end, we have seen, you know, that lockdown did, you know, produce that result. But going forward, you know, where do you see 5G actually playing a role in a more technologically advanced future?
Yeah, Maduro, this is a very interesting topic. And I think for me, my point of departure is that we require a huge amount of end-user education. The mobile operators are positioning 5G as this de facto, every person with a mobile phone in their hands will have access to 5G, will enjoy 200, 300, 400 megabits of download speed. And that I think is wrong. I think they're doing a disjustice to the market. That has not been proven in any country internationally. It doesn't matter how mature 5G is. And I just want to put a few things into perspective before we carry on in terms of the applications. So first of all, those areas that were called launched, the contention in those areas were limited because there were a handful of people who's actually got a 5G phone right now, with a 5G SIM card, with a subscription to the right data package. You've also got no guarantee on a mobile device that those speeds that they measured and which they bragged about will be maintained, because those speeds are much more available when you've got fixed 5G. So it's an antenna in your house or in your building pointing to a base station. then you know that that line of sight always stays the same. The moment you are, you know, you're mobile, you're moving between buildings with a tree that could interfere, cars that could interfere. You've got a different distance from the base station. And we know that the further you go from a base station, there is a dramatic drop in speed, but like exponential drop. So I think the mobile operators aren't doing the education enough justice about, guys, 5G on your mobile phone is not about the speed at what you will download a movie. That's definitely not the application. And we'll get into the application space in a second. And I think it's going to take a good 18 months to 2 years until most of us who are using smartphones will have replaced their phones and then be using a 5G-enabled phone. And I think the last thing for me, and that talks back to the education, will be the data bundle pricing. So in the more mature markets, you will see that a 5G data bundle is roughly between 20 and 30% more expensive than a 4G bundle. So me as a user, I need to have at least a 30 or 40% benefit. Forget just the speed. I've got to either have a healthier life, more secure life, access to information that I never had. I've got to really, really have a defined benefit before it will get the average guys to pay 30% more. And that's also something that's not being communicated, is why pay 40%, 30% more if there's no real benefit? True, and I'm talking about a true benefit here, not just this perceived value of a faster download speed.
You know, Jacques, as you're talking, one of the things that I'm sort of now thinking is one of the big contentions that the mobile operators have had is that South Africa was a bit slow to get to 4G, for example. So in terms of defining those consumer benefits that you're talking about that then justify a 20 to 30% premium on data prices in a country that is already sensitive about, you know, the cost of accessing the internet, etc. Have we done enough with 4G that we should be looking to 5G as the promise of a better future?
So I think the challenge that the mobile operators are facing is congestion. Spectrum and the allocation of more spectrum has been promised for many years now. And ICASA and government fails month after month after month. So the operators are so desperate to get their hands on more spectrum so that they can reform the existing spectrum, provide a fit-for-purpose solution. If they've got 5G, they can go and design a solution that is fit for that, that high-frequency band. So we haven't, I think we've explored every possibility to milk what is available in terms of the 4G spectrum. The next step for me that is kind of defining will be how this bidding process will happen for the 5G spectrum. Because, you know, if the cost of the bid is excessively high, that's all that's going to happen is that will be a pass-through cost to the end user. So we will end up paying a lot more. If it's moderate or very low and it can be priced at the same price as 4G, I think the penetration of or the uptake of that spectrum will be phenomenal. So, you know, I've given you a lot of answers here now, but I think we have tried our best to reform 4G as much as we can, but there's restraints in terms of the availability of spectrum.
And then the other one, you know, because I think, you know, for you and I, we've had this conversation one or two times. We've discussed it at length. But for those that may not understand fully, what is the interest of, you know, your industry as fiber operators when it comes to this debate around the direction of the 3, 4, 5G, when it comes to those technologies? Because I think as consumers, we might think that these are completely separate services, that on the one side, you've got mobile operators, on the other side, fiber is completely different. You know, where are the intersections for people that may not understand?
So the first thing is people do think, you're quite right, they do think it's two separate networks. The one will be always, call it outgun the other, the one will bankrupt the other, et cetera, and that's completely so far from the truth. 5G cannot operate effectively without a fiber connection taking care of the backhaul. So even if there's this massive explosion of 5G, and even if it overtakes fiber to the home, where you have got fiber connected to your house now being replaced with fiber, with some wireless device, that backhaul to the base station will have to be fiber. Now, to be able to offer these excessive speeds, the base stations needs to be 60 to 80, maybe 85 meters placed from each other. So that's effectively in front of every house where there will be a small antenna. And every one of those antennas will be connected with a fiber link. So the question is, all I'm doing now is I'm replacing the fiber running into someone's study to the fiber running onto the antenna being placed in front of his garden. So the one definitely can't work without the other. And I think one needs to understand that there's nothing ever faster than light. And fiber, the data transmission over fiber is via light. There's no radio frequency. So someone that has got a high demand for speed at and wants an uncapped price, and where the price per meg is the most competitive, you know, fiber will always remain relevant. Where someone wants mobility, different question. Then I'm prepared to give up something. I'm prepared to give up uncapped, low price, unlimited speed because I want mobility.
No, I like that explanation because I think it sort of makes us understand just a bit more how, you know, those different pieces fit together. So I guess, you know, as we are rounding up the discussion, who do you think is actually going to benefit more from that 5G future? There is the consumer side, whether it's fixed routers at the home, possibly replacing, those fiber to the home connections, or 5G on smartphones, as you spoke about, in the next 18 to 24 months, as more and more people buy these 5G enabled devices. But it does seem, you know, that for most consumers, as long as the spectrum is made available, that 4G on the consumer side, what are your thoughts? Is it actually, are consumers actually going to see these benefits, or is it more going to be an enterprise sort of application, at least in the foreseeable future?
So my belief is it will evolve, and what's fit for purpose today will not be in a year and two and three. I'm of the opinion that enterprise, well, 5G, first of all, for me, really enables the Internet of Things. I can suddenly connect more devices where latency is critical. So where I've got something connected to the Internet, where I need to get information across this network immediately without any form of latency, those applications are going to thrive. So that will be virtual reality, augmented reality, distance medicine, those kind of applications, where I also believe that a 5G network will be deployed in a localized manner. And I'll give you another example. You can go to a mine and put down a mast, give that area of 30, 40, 50 square meters 5G coverage, and connect every single piece of hardware that brings life to that mine to the internet. So I'll have autonomous vehicles, autonomous plants, and I'll measure the health and safety health and safety risks on a 24-hour basis. And with that fast type of connectivity in this localized manner, we can make much faster decisions. So you will be able to run a safer plant, a healthier plant, a more cost-effective plant. As the 5G market matures and as more of these localized networks are placed next to each other, it will create a mesh. And that's when the consumer will have access to this mesh that has already been funded by bespoke applications. And that should be able then to drive the price down to levels which is close to 4G. But, you know, that's trying to look down a crystal ball here. Time will tell. I just think one needs to be very agile and very open-minded in terms of the evolution of 5G.
And then I guess as we end off the discussion, Jacques, what other technologies outside of 5G are you excited about as someone who's been in the industry for a while? And yes, there isn't a crystal ball, but just some of the emerging things that you are keeping an eye on.
Yeah, I think the two technologies that one needs to keep an eye out for, and again, it's early days, Wi-Fi 6, that will disrupt the way we currently understand Wi-Fi and are exposed to the limitations of the current Wi-Fi. And then the next one that I'm very excited about is SD-WAN. There's various flavors of SD-WAN available, but I think the fact that it gives you a networking capability at a cost point which has never been seen before is phenomenal. So it's just reducing connectivity issues, security issues, a lot quicker than was ever expected. And it allows us to have multiple forms of redundancy plugged into a single box. That box, you know, gives you a WAN type environment. It gives you all the security features that in the past was only available if you ended up putting separate devices down. So yeah, SD-WAN and Wi-Fi 6, definitely something to look forward to.
Perhaps as a follow-up to that, because you brought out the issue of security, which has been quite topical in the last couple of months, how is Vox thinking about security, and especially as more and more devices and more connectivity is being demanded? How is Vox thinking about security?
So also a very steep learning curve for us over the last 5 months. I think every consumer out there underestimated the amount of security devices connected to his network. And that was exaggerated by people being in lockdown mode, mother, father, kids, everybody having various devices connected. Prior to lockdown, we counted on average in a household of four people, about 12 devices connected to the internet. It's now sitting close to the 21, and we expect by the end of the year it will be about 25 to 28 devices. Because everybody now has got a printer, a laptop, a smartwatch, Showmax, a Netflix device. I mean, everything you purchase these days connects via a Wi-Fi network to the internet. Every one of those connections can pose, if not secured, a possible security breach or vulnerability. So, you know, we took the stance that we're going to put our effort into education more than product sales. If a customer is educated in terms of what's available in the market, where am I vulnerable, then he will buy product. Where I guess most of the organizations looking after security solutions are pushing product all the time. You need a firewall. You need endpoint security. You need. Rather go and educate. And then the customer will know himself what is. So that's been our stance, and we started, I would say, in the middle of last month to really drive webinars, seminars, customer drip campaigns, just trying to enhance that awareness. Because we've seen a massive spike in DDoS attacks, false websites being erected, ransomware attacks. That's definitely increased fourfold, fivefold during lockdown. So, yeah, we hope that customers are taking this serious.
We certainly do hope that consumers do take some of this advice and are keeping themselves safe. So that's been us with Jacques Dutoy, who is the CEO of technology and telecoms operator, that is Vox. And he was just giving us some insight, firstly, into how they've been able to shift and manage their business in line with the current lockdown, and how their business has evolved during the various stages. Just some thoughts around the work from home culture, and also just getting into the 5G discussion. And he was just giving us some insight into its potential benefits for consumers and businesses, and some of the things that are potentially holding us back from experiencing or realizing the best potential of what 5G could offer. And ending off just talking about security and just making sure that consumers stay safe, because we are more and more connected. One of my big takeaways was he said that before the lockdown they used to count about 12 or so devices in an average household being connected to the internet, and that's now up to about 21, possibly getting to about 28 by the end of the year, which is a huge jump. And all of those are potentially points of contact or vulnerability, and people just need to educate yourselves and just make sure that you do stay safe.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Yet another fascinating discussion with a business leader, and I think we're looking at how connectivity affects consumers, especially in an increasingly connected world. This was quite a fascinating discussion from that point of view, and especially some of the things that Jacques was able to tell us just around some of the trends that they've been seeing on their own network. And like I said at the end of the discussion, the fact that you do have that situation where they were counting on average 12 devices per household, but now that's gone up to 21. That just speaks to the level of connectivity that's actually happening out there, because probably people had certain devices that they only used perhaps at the office or at their business premises that they had to bring home. And now that it's at home, they're actually wondering, do I really need to take this thing back to the office, or can I continue working here? The second one is just that issue of internet speeds. As a geek myself, I've always thought internet speeds and a stable connection are just a must. And, you know, you go, you find the best deal and you do what needs to be done. But I think going into the lockdown, people really started to understand the true value of what it means to have a stable and fast internet connection. Because in the normal course of life, if your connection times out or you are throttled on your network, and throttling when network operators slow your speed down, you know, issues like that, it doesn't really affect that much. But where you're on a Zoom call or you're in an important meeting and then there's a drop in the network, or perhaps your internet speeds aren't fast enough to cope with the connections. Plus, at the same time, on this consumer side, a lot of people have tended to use their mobile phones at home as a hotspot if they need to connect certain devices, because you typically will have, at least for many professionals out there, there will be that access to an unlimited connection when you're at the office and then at home here and there to check emails. But where your cell phone now becomes your primary connectivity device, your costs almost shoot through the roof because, you know, to this day, mobile data is still, you know, more expensive than fiber is, for example. So all of those different dynamics and how it's playing out, if you want your child, for example, to have the best experience in an online learning environment, then you need to have that investment in connectivity. So it's been an interesting one to see, and how this discussion continues is going to be good to see. The government needs to come to the table with the spectrum, as Jacques was talking about, but also the last one on 5G. My take is that 5G, at least for the next 3 to 5 years, you know, if it doesn't work out this way, then, you know, we stand to be corrected. But at least in the next 3 to 5 years, I don't think normal consumers will really get to enjoy or benefit from 5G and its real capabilities. It will be more an enterprise and Internet of Things sort of technology, because on the mobile connectivity side, for example, 4G, which can run, you know, upwards of 50 megabits per second, it can be, you know, as long as the connection is stable, I think it's more than adequate for most typical users. And if you're going to be having a fixed connection, you know, have your router that has a SIM card in it, those prices do come down, you know, on that end. And as Jacques was saying, chances are, at least in these early stages, prices on data packages for 5G are likely to cost a bit more, which will not be attractive for most consumers. So at least in the, you know, short term, I think 5G will most likely be something that is going to benefit enterprises, Internet of Things, and those early adopters, those people who do want the latest and greatest technologies. But for the average consumer, I think 4G more than adequate. So with that, we've come to the end of today's show. Thank you so much to everyone who was listening. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the Podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasted. Thank you to our amazing team, our producers, our Paige Muller and Moriehi Mashamaite. I've been Muriwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.